All right. Welcome, everyone. My name is Aparna Raisam. I am Senior Director of Engineering at Akamai Technologies. I manage the web security business's engineering organization there. I am thrilled to be here to support the advancement of so many women leaders across the state and also support this community. A little bit about Akamai Technologies. As most of you may be aware, Akamai is a technological powerhouse that enables the top enterprises across the country, across the world, in enabling the internet to be fast, reliable, and secure. Apart from being the technological powerhouse, we also pride ourselves in having a very diverse and a thriving community of employees. A large part of this is due to the employee resource groups that are thriving in Akamai. Like I said, I was most recently part of the Women's Forum. I led the Women's Forum US chapter. And as part of the forum, our charter was to attract top talent and also encourage in retention and development of that talent through efforts like what we are seeing here. We are thrilled to be partners for the Mass Conference of Women. Conference for Women, as you know, offers a blend of practical tools and advice, inspiration, and peer networking through a mix of sessions. We are all committed to your empowerment to inspire you to make your mark in and for your companies, your careers, and your communities. Thank you for participating in our breakout session, How to Get Buy-in to Pioneer Equity and Close the Gap in Your Organization. We have an amazing hour in store for you. Now I'm excited to introduce Megan Costello. A little bit about Megan. Megan is currently the Executive Director of the Mayor's Office for Women's Advancement for the City of Boston. She was instrumental and part of a large number of campaigns and a lot of elected officials. I won't run through every list, every campaign, because believe me when I say this, it's a long, illustrious career. I'll call out a couple of very successful campaigns. She was part of Seti Warren's campaign for the mayor of Newton. She was also part of President Barack Obama's re-election campaign. She was also part of Senator Ed Markey's campaign, and most recently, obviously, Mayor Walsh's campaign. At Mayor Walsh's request, she joined his administration to head the Office of the Women's Advancement. She sits on the board of NARAL and a bunch of other boards. So, which... Absolutely. There is her bio is detailed, and I encourage all of you to take a look at it. Without too much ado, Megan, take it away.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
It's great to be with you all, and thank you, Aparna, for that very thoughtful introduction. I have worked on a lot of campaigns, which is, you know, why in 10 years I have aged quite a bit. So we are here today to talk about how to get buy-in to pioneer equity in your organization. I think this is a question that many of us often have, is how can we have impact as individuals in our workplaces? Can one person really make the change? And I think the answer is absolutely yes. If you were here for the opening session this morning, Mayor Walsh mentioned in his remarks the collective power of individual voices calling for change. And we know that gender parity is essential to ending sexual harassment in our workplaces, creating equal pay, and producing better products. Today, we're going to hear from panelists Molly Ford of Salesforce and Jeff Halter from Why Women about their work and how they impact change within their organizations and even beyond that. And the goal of today's session is for everyone in this room to walk out of here with an action item, or more than one, to change culture within your own organizations. Whether you've been with your company for a week or you've been there for 30 years, everybody has a role to play. My role is probably different than many people in this room. I work in government. I work in the public sector for a municipality. And I don't think many people these days have a good taste in their mouth about government. And I can get that, and I can totally understand that. I hope to change your mind a little bit. I think politicians, in many ways, people see them as out of touch, but government is not helping those in need. But I've actually seen government transform people's lives. And I think that leadership really matters and action really matters. And at the local level, we can't always control what the state does, although we do live in a great state of Massachusetts. And we definitely can't control what the federal government is doing. But we can use our voices, and we can especially use the bully pulpit of the mayor's office to call for that change. I want to take a few minutes to share with you the approach that we've taken at the local level to address the gender wage gap and a variety of issues that impact women and girls. But I want to share my brief story with you and how I got to know Marty Walsh, our mayor. In 2013, then State Representative Marty Walsh asked me to be his campaign manager. I like to say Marty Walsh ruined my life in the best possible way. When I met him, I was about to accept another job, managing a congressional race. I had no desire, none at all, to get involved in the open seat that was the Boston mayor's race. There were 12 candidates running. It was a nightmare. But I had a mutual friend that I respected that knew Marty and said, you should go for the interview. So just as I was about to accept this other job, I said, well, you should never turn down an opportunity. And I went for a job interview, and an hour later, I walked out of that room accepting the job to be his campaign manager. He's a very convincing man. I made a lot of assumptions about who Marty Walsh is. He's a white guy from Dorchester with a building trades background. He couldn't possibly be a progressive. I learned quickly that that was the furthest thing from the truth. The campaign was tough. Every single poll had us behind, but we made a plan and we stuck with it. And to many people's surprise, we pulled off a victory with just 4,908 votes. After we won, I had no intention, again, of coming into the administration. I was ready for my next campaign, already talking to other candidates, but the then mayor-elect convinced me to join his administration just for a year. And I could take any project I wanted. I was a little tired after 2013, so I decided this was the perfect opportunity to take a break. Little did I know that I'd be standing here 4 years later, almost in our second term, leading some of the most meaningful work of my career as the executive director for the Mayor's Office of Women's Advancement, the only office of its kind in the country, and it was created by Mayor Walsh in 2014 when we took office. Now, why do we need an office like this? It's 2017. Well, women make up the majority of our population in Boston, 52%. Women of color make up the majority of that with 54%. But women are underrepresented, especially women of color, are underrepresented in every aspect of city life. When we came into office in 2014, we knew we had a responsibility to change that. Government can and should work to pass legislation and policies that protect the most vulnerable populations. But laws and policies don't stop bad behavior from happening. That takes culture change. The gender wage gap, let's take that as an example. This is something that's been talked about for decades and decades. But we have not seen significant changes in the numbers. On average, white women make 77 cents, black women make 69 cents, and Latina women make just 54 cents on the dollar. This isn't just bad for them as individuals. This is bad for the economy as a whole. This is bad for families. This is bad for communities. McKinsey came out with a study that said our GDP would increase by $2.1 trillion by the year 2025 if women were paid the same as men. So this isn't just about social justice, although, you know, it's 2017. Maybe we should treat women equally. But this is also about our economy. So what can we do about this, and how can we finally close the gender wage gap? Well, in Boston, we've decided it's time to stop talking about it and time to start doing something about it. When you have a complex problem, you need a multi-pronged solution, and every single person has a role to play. We address this problem from three perspectives: legislation, so policy, employers, both policy and culture, and individual women addressing culture. It was clear to us that addressing just one of these categories was not going to have lasting or meaningful impact. And again, every single person has a role to play in one of those categories. The mayor offered his support behind the newly rewritten legislation, an act to establish equal pay. We worked with the Attorney General's office and a number of community organizations, led by my colleague at the state, Jill Ashton, to lobby for the successful passage of that legislation. And we ultimately won over the business community and lawmakers because we convinced them that this was the right thing to do, but also good for the economy. A little bit repetitive here. The historic legislation passed last session. It goes into effect of July of 2018. And I really want everybody in this room to walk out of here and educate themselves about this bill. It goes into effect next summer, July, or this summer, coming up. And it calls for more pay transparency. It calls for us to eliminate the salary history question because, frankly, it's irrelevant. And it's really, really going to change, I think, a lot of working women's experiences in the workplace. Next, we knew that we had to work with employers because employers, as Jeff and Molly are going to talk about in a moment, have an enormous power to close the gender wage gap. The Boston Women's Workforce Council is an appointed council by Mayor Walsh. It's a public-private partnership between the business community and the city of Boston. It's led by my tremendous colleague, Mary Rose Mazzola. And businesses agree to sign up to what's called the 100% Talent Compact, pledging to take concrete steps to eliminate the wage gap within their organizations and report salary data anonymously by gender every 2 years. This is significant because it's never been done before. Right now, the wage gap is based on a best guess. It's based on census data. This report uses real wage data from employers. And to date, we have 225 employers in the greater Boston area, including some of the big ones like State Street that are, you know, today's sponsor. That accounts for 200,000 workers in the greater Boston area, 16% of our workforce, and $12 billion in compensation annually. This constitutes a significant database that is unmatched in the nation. And lastly, we knew we had to work with individual women to give them the tools they need to successfully negotiate their salaries. I want to be very clear. It is not just up to women to negotiate their salaries to achieve pay equity, because if that was the case, we would have done it by day one. But we have to recognize that women are socialized differently, and we are taught to be great advocates for everybody except ourselves. So we decided to partner with the Association of University Women down in Washington, D.C., with the goal of training 85,000 women, that's half of our workforce here in Boston, how to negotiate their salary in the next 5 years. And to date, we've trained 6,000 women in these workshops, and we did a case study in the first year to measure success, because measuring success is important. And we found that 90% of those who took these workshops took some sort of immediate action following those workshops. And there's really this ripple effect that's happening. It's these unintended consequences of the work that we do as well, of people having a conversation about this. You know, I hear all the time women take these workshops and then they go home and they tell their two roommates and their two roommates come to a workshop, and it really is this ripple effect that it's having in Boston. This is how you have impact. You think about an idea and you think about it from different perspectives. And I'm confident that because of the multi-pronged approach that we've taken in Boston, we are going to see the gender wage gap close here sooner than elsewhere in the country. So this is just one example. I babbled on for a little bit about the work our office does. I'm very lucky to do this work every day. We have a fantastic ally in Mayor Walsh in you know, leading us in this way. But I want to just sum up a couple of points that I made here, because I think that this is about you thinking about your careers and the impact that you can have when you go back to your workplace. So a couple of things I've mentioned in this. One, think differently about the issues that we've been talking about for years. You know, the pay equity legislation was rewritten and refiled every single year for over 20 years. And we thought about it differently last year. And we said we need to get businesses bought in. We need to have, you know, changes in the language. Leaning on male allies. You know, this is something Jeff's going to talk a lot about. And Mayor Walsh, obviously, I've got a pretty good one as a male ally in the workplace. But men want to be engaged in this, and we can't do this without men. And it just can't be up to women. And lastly, I mentioned a number of colleagues, businesses, and partnerships, because we can't do this work alone. We need to lean on each other, support each other, and ultimately strategize to understand what strengths as individuals we bring to the table so that our collective power is unstoppable. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our panel. I'm also doing the questions, so I will change seats. I want to introduce our two panelists that we have here today. You're very lucky to be joined by Jeffrey Halter, who is a gender strategist and the president of Why Women, a strategic consulting company focused on engaging men in women's leadership issues. He's the author of two books and has worked with a number of very large companies in the United States on creating gender equity in the workplace. And we have Molly Ford, who's the director of global equity programs at Salesforce. Salesforce, I think many people in this room have heard of Salesforce, probably use Salesforce. And Salesforce has been named over and over again as the number one place to work and has done some really interesting, I would say even very forward-thinking stuff around transparency and their wages. So we're going to turn it over to them, and we will dive right into our questions. And Molly, let's start with you telling us a little bit about your journey with Salesforce and the mark that Salesforce has made on the equal pay audits.
Awesome. So I've been at Salesforce for 6 years now. I started, traditionally my career has been as a communications professional, and I had the opportunity to work behind some of our leading women executives, and we just organically started to put out messages, narratives, and really talk about advancing women in the workplace, around equal pay, around mentorship and sponsorship of women. And then I had the opportunity about 2 years ago to turn this into my full-time job, something that was a passion to move into this. So Salesforce uniquely has an Office of Equality, and I report to a Chief Equality Officer, Tony Proffitt. And we have a couple of things we work on. We're advocating for LGBTQ rights, equal opportunity, meaning making tech more diverse. Equal pay is something we're working on. And then equal access to education. So through our Salesforce nonprofit, we're donating funds to schools, public schools specifically. And then also we're doing something very simple called circling a school. And that means you just go up to your local school principal and you say, how can I help? How can we get involved? And then our employees spend their time volunteering at those local schools. So for us, equality is something we work on because, of course, we feel like it's a great thing to do, it's the right thing to do, but also we know there's a business case for it, right? We know that we are attracting customers that are like-minded. Salesforce is, we'll get to this later, we've done an equal pay audit, an assessment, and we paid out monies to balance salaries. And so we're sharing that methodology with our customers and trying to encourage them to come along on this journey around equality.
That's a pretty cool job, Molly. Thank you. Jeff, tell us about your work and especially the ways that we can get men involved.
Yeah, so I work primarily with Fortune 500 companies, focusing on really engaging male leadership to get very passionate and active around doing this work. Because to your point, it is 2017. Everyone understands this is a really good idea. The problem is most organizations don't have integrated strategies on how to bring it together. And then how do you go about engaging men? So those are kind of the two aspects of my work. And to do that, we need to speak like business people. I would love to say everyone's, you know, prepared to do this. CEOs are prepared to do this because it's the right thing to do. But the way we use diversity and inclusion, women, people of color, as a leverage is to put it in business terms. And the easiest way for you to do that in your company is to go back and just simply ask or figure out to your senior leadership, what's keeping you up at night? And I guarantee you it's going to be one of three things. Number one, how do I grow revenue? Business is really tough today. Mm-hmm. And so how are you connecting women and D&I to the bottom line, or actually to the top line when it comes to revenue? What does your customer base look like? What does your sales base look like calling on customers? I do a lot of work with B2B companies like Caterpillar and United Technology, the Department of Defense. 40% of purchasing agents today are women. So you can't just show up with a bunch of men in your sales force and expect to be successful. And then the next thing is, how do you improve operating profit? So revenue is tough to grow, but yet I still have to grow double-digit results. Well, do you realize that 10,000 boomers a day are leaving your workforce? And they're all older white men who look just like me. And, oh, by the way, I also look like most of the senior leaders in your organization. 10,000 a day, every year, for the next 7 years until we're all gone. And the face of leadership today looks like this room. It's young, it's millennial, it's multicultural, it's people of color. And so literally overnight, your workforce is going to change. And by making things better for women, well, you make things better for millennials, you make things better for old white guys like me. And so it becomes around engagement and innovation and productivity. And then the last one that's really important is you have to talk about corporate social responsibility. Uber comes to mind. You know, Travis Kalanick did not go to bed a year ago thinking he would lose his company over one social media blog. And that was well before Me Too and sexual harassment in the news. If you don't have a women's strategy, if you don't have an LGBTQ strategy, this is a cost of doing business nowadays, and you are not going to get the best and the brightest showing up to work for you. So that's how you start to talk to your leadership about it. It's a business imperative. It's not a nice thing to do.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about that, you know, in the hallway about saying you got to meet people where they're at. You know, not everybody's going to do this because they believe in gender equity. Hopefully they do, or maybe they don't quite understand 100% of what that means, but they do understand business's bottom line. Yeah. Molly, tell us a little bit about the equal pay audits and what Salesforce kind of did a couple years ago. This is really innovative work.
Great. Yesterday, one of our speakers, Cindy Robbins, she's our head of HR, chief people officer. She got together with another woman leader, and she had benefited from some of the programs Salesforce had around 2015 to advance women. And some of these programs were taking high potential women and exposing them to leadership opportunities, meaning our CEO does an offsite with his top leaders, and he looked around the room and said, well, where's my next generation of leader? Where are the leaders? Where are the people of color? Where are the women? And so he challenged everyone in the organization, go back to your team, and next quarter or next year when we have this meeting, bring 10 high potential people with you, right? And so the real magic in that was noticing how far down in people's organizations they had to go to then invite a woman of color, a woman. So you have all your senior execs, and then there's like a senior manager sitting there like, why is that senior manager in there? But it wasn't a disparaging opportunity for women, because one of our leaders said, when I sat in those rooms and saw how business leaders were thinking and what was happening, it spurred ideas like, what's my next job? What's my next role? What am I asking for? How do I align to that business? And just by being in that room and seeing how the planning, how the leaders were doing, gave them this idea. So two women, Layla Seca, who runs our products, and then Cindy Robbins got together, and they went to our CEO, the girl power went together, and said, hey, we've benefited from some of these programs to advance women. We'd like to pay it forward. How can we help other women? And they had a list of things they asked for. One of the things was extending our maternity leave beyond 12 weeks. And now we're proud to say we have 6 months maternity, wow, or we call it family leave, right? Absolutely. And then I had an idea for a women's summit at our Dreamforce, our big annual customer conference. That was an idea. And then they said, we'd like to do an equal pay audit and assessment. Mm. And Mark Benioff, our CEO, said, I don't have the kind of company that would pay people differently. Prove it. And that's where data comes into play, because he says, go get the data. And we're proud to say we couldn't look under the hood and go, oops, sorry, just kidding. Yeah. Right? So we looked under the hood, and we found that we did indeed have a wage gap. And we found the need the first year in 2016 to pay out $3 million to balance salaries. Any statistical differences? Absolutely. And very publicly, we said if there were any differences in pay, and that first year, we found only 3 to 6% of employees were impacted, and we nearly paid out men, just as many men as women.
Yeah.
Right? Equal pay for equal work. And so we had nearly as many men. And then we said, let's do it again the next year. So this past year, we did the audit again, and we found another problem.
Yep.
Right? And a lot of that was due to the exponential growth of Salesforce. But more importantly, we decided, let's put in processes in place so this doesn't continue to happen. So as you said, looking at legislation, but also doing it because it's the right thing to do. Now, globally, we are no longer asking, what's your current salary? Because we know that women are bringing a pay gap with them throughout their career. Instead, in advance, we're asking our leaders to determine, what is your salary band for this role? What are you willing to pay? What number of years experience are you looking for? So we have a number we already know we want to pay for this role. And then when we're talking to a candidate, the question is, what is your salary expectation?
Yep.
And we're not basing it off where they are now.
Yep.
Right? So we're going to continue the process of an equal pay audit. We're going to continue to assess and put in processes so we can stop you know, stop this wage gap, you know, with us. And then we also want to share this with our customers and our network of how we can all do an equal pay assessment so we can make sure we're doing equal pay for equal work.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Let's give that a round of applause. I think this is such a great example. You know, so many employers are so afraid to do what Salesforce did and open that, you know, hood and see what's under there. But have you found that it's, you know, helped morale and helped with retention and just overall wellness at the organization?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think Salesforce employees appreciate the transparency.
Yeah.
Right? It's the transparency that's important. And, you know, people hear about it and then I'll have employees say, oh, wow, I got this email saying here's the assessment, right? And then I think there's a lot of trust that we've built throughout the organization. You know, we've always had a culture of giving back and an empathetic culture of really giving back and being out in our community, but it really shows our employees that we're committed to things we say. Because, of course, we didn't have to go public and say, oops, we found a gap, right? But that was part of the accountability for us to say, okay, we've got a problem, we're going to fix it, and committing to that, because we did want to be an example for the industry. So I think it is one of the reasons why Salesforce can say we win Best Place to Work awards and we're a really popular employer.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, Jeff, we were talking about the transparency and how that actually really does help organizations retain talent. And so many people think, oh, don't talk about money, don't talk about your salary, but that actually creates you know, a little bit of fear or question and doesn't help the organization succeed.
And what's so powerful is exactly what Molly said, because I spend my time with senior leadership teams, and every one of them says, prove to me we have a wage gap. And I look at them and I say, I can't. I don't have access to your data. But every CEO in this country can push an F10 report and know tomorrow, by gender, by experience, by wages, what their people are paid. And so the burden of proof isn't on you, it's on the company. And I'm sincerely going to apologize for all the lawyers in the room, but 95% of the time, legal will not let the CEO push that button because it becomes discoverable. And or you're going to be writing checks for well more than $3 million. So the burden of proof is on the company. And I say that because even though Massachusetts is doing great work and you've got pay equity, a lot of people sitting here don't work for Massachusetts-based companies.
Yeah.
And so it also boils back to exactly what you said, which is you're losing talent. This is, you know, you have Glassdoor. You have social media. You can spend an hour and figure out what your job is worth. There are no secrets. And if you think there are secrets, you're wrong. Every company is a social media blog away from a sexual harassment suit, a pay equity dispute. And quite frankly, if I'm a CEO, I do not want to worry about this. I want to take aggressive, proactive steps so that, you know, the Wall Street Journal is not calling me or Forbes isn't calling me because I'm on the front page of the paper.
Yeah. So. Well, and that's one of the things about the Massachusetts legislation that I think is so interesting. The resistance from the business community for a long time in Massachusetts was, we're going to get sued. You know, we're going to find a wage gap and we're going to get sued and we can't afford that, all this stuff. So we actually put in the bill a 6-month grace period. So if a company discovered that there was a gap or an employee discovered that there was a gap, the company has six months to rectify that problem. And that really gave the business community such a sigh of relief. And, you know, it was amazing after 20 or so years of different female legislators bringing this bill up every single year. It was just about having the conversation of, well, what is the problem? What's preventing us from doing this? That was really a very fantastic experience to have from, like, the government side of things, just talking to business.
I wanted to build on that just for a moment, you know, this notion of full transparency,
yeah.
Right? Because it's also your promotion numbers, which I know you publish. And again, you'll have a lot of companies say, well, we can't post that or you know, we can't track that. We're business people. We track everything. We track paper clips and your gas receipts. But, oh, my God, God forbid, we you know, count and publish the number of women that we advance or minorities that we advance.
Yeah.
It's just silly in this day and age.
Well, and I think being intentional about it, right? You know, for a long time, people would say, "Oh, I don't see color, I don't see gender." And first of all, it's BS. But second of all, you know, we should be intentional about it. We should say, "Okay, we have this new position that's open, and you know, we've had it traditionally held by white men, and let's make sure that 50% of our resumes are female, and 50% of our resumes are people of color, so that we can ensure that there's at least a diverse pool." You know, we were talking a little bit about the qualifications piece, you know, and what actually qualifies you to do a job. So let's talk about best practices. Let's talk about, you know, what can companies do? What can everybody here do to really begin to take steps at their own organizations to address these issues? Molly, let's start with you.
So we've instituted something, going back to the data. Data is something that every executive is accustomed to, every executive wants and needs. We do something that we simply call Know Your Numbers. So that means on a monthly basis, our senior leaders that have sizable organizations, we give them a diversity scorecard. And this scorecard says this is the number of women in your organization, the number of people of color, underrepresented minorities. But we also say, here's how many left your organization. Here's your attrition, right? And then we said, here's who you promoted. Right, and we're giving them this monthly. Now, monthly, that data really doesn't move. But the goal here is every senior executive is looking at the health of their business, their pipeline, their revenue. We want them to be accustomed to looking at their people analytics with the same business rigor, right? So if they can see over a quarter and we say, well, wow, you haven't promoted not one woman in three quarters, as an example, right? There's no excuse for something like that happening. You have the data right here.
Yeah.
And we're sharing that data with their HR person, their chief of staff, or any kind of operations lead, and making sure they have this scorecard. And this is a proactive email. And now we're going to use our own technology to give them an analytics dashboard so they can move and manipulate the data to understand, well, if I were to do this, what does this mean? How does this impact our data? And so the goal here is to really be putting the people analytics in front of these leaders so they know what's happening with the health of their business. And another thing that I think really leads into your role, we have a campaign at Salesforce where we're asking all of our employees to join an employee resource group, right? Mm-hmm. And we call them Ohana groups, and our company culture at Salesforce, Ohana, it's the Hawaiian term that means your chosen family, the people that you feel responsible for by choice, not your blood relative. So we call them Ohana groups, our employee resource groups. And we have 10 Ohana groups that we financially empower and support. So like Bold Force for Black employees and their allies, Salesforce Women's Network, and then we have Outforce for our LGBTQ employees. But more importantly, we're asking all of our employees, nearly 30,000 employees, go join an Ohana group. Mm-hmm. So then when someone says, well, I don't really look like them, or I'm not an underrepresented minority, what do I do? Well, we're like, you're not off the hook. You go join an employee resource group as an ally.
Yeah.
And we ran an ally campaign, and we said, everyone is responsible for being an ally for someone else. That's part of our Ohana and being responsible for someone. So we have this great term for Salesforce Women's Network. They do Lean In Circle meetings, and they call it BAM. So everyone, we say, you got a BAM. And BAM means bring a man along.
Love that.
We had a lunch and learn about parenting, and someone said, here's all the amazing apps I use to run my life and manage my kids and my schedule, and everyone was responsible. When we did that lunch and learn, everyone bring a man along, right? And the men are like, oh, wow, I never knew about that app, or oh, wow, I need to get that, or oh, I need to help, because we want to build a community of allies for everyone. And for us, allyship is four easy steps. We say ask. Ask me what you don't know about me. Ask me how I can help. I have an employee who happens to be LGBTQ, and I said, so what exactly is queer? Explain that to me.
Yeah.
So it ask, right? Educate yourself as well, right? And then we say listen. Like, be a listener. Understand someone's different experience or journey, or, you know, for us, if one of our largest campuses is Indianapolis, and there's a shooting of an unarmed Black man, ask a Black person how that impacts their community, right? Ask what that means. And then the third one, ask, listen, we ask them to show up. So that's BAM, just show up. If we have a Diwali, if we have a Diwali celebration, everyone likes good food and dancing. Right? Everyone should be able to come and enjoy that. Absolutely. Understand someone's culture, ask some questions about it, and then we say speak up. So if you see something happening, if someone's making that crude joke, if someone's cutting off a woman in a meeting, it is your responsibility. And I really feel like it gives someone a role to play, and we say the cisgender white male is not off the hook. Mm-hmm. You have a role here. you're being an ally to the rest of your Ohana.
That's fantastic. Yeah, we do a lot of the look to your left, look to your right. Are there women in the room? Are there people of color in the room? Holding folks accountable for, you know, cutting people off. I go into meetings sometimes with strategies of, I'm going to say this in the meeting, Jeff. Can you make sure to, you know, have my back after I say that comment? Being very intentional about behavior is really, really important. Jeff, talk a little bit about men in the workplace, right? Holding men accountable, talking about the role that, you know, white men have to play.
Yeah, and that's really important. And I would love to tell you that every company I work for is as progressive as Salesforce. they're not. And if you heard Adam today from the stage, you know, he kind of talked about the fact that we should do this because it's the right thing to do. And, you know, yeah, we should, but it doesn't work. It's just not practical enough. You know, we should have pay equity. We should have transparency. This is what I advocate. Find the 30% of men who are out there and ready and willing to help you. We are out there, and invite us in. And you know who they are. They are the men in your organization that just wear fairness on their sleeve. They believe in doing the right thing. They believe in every voice being heard in a meeting. They understand the business case. They understand what the imperative is about this. And this is what I have found moves men from conceptual understanding, right? Everyone knows this is a good idea. What drives you to will? What drives you to advocacy? And I have found that the men who choose to do this work are have a personal connection. They have a working spouse. Maybe they were raised by a single mother. Or 9 times out of 10, they're the father of a daughter. And I can say this very genuinely after 30 years in business. For the first 20 years of my career, I never made a connection that if I'm not advocating for women in the workforce, then my daughter is going to face the same bias and challenges that I chose to ignore. And yet, this sounds really heavy-handed, particularly to boomer men, because we wanted to raise strong daughters. I supported my daughter, whether it was music or art or sports. I made sure my daughter went to a great college. And when my daughter graduates and makes 78 cents to my son, I choose to do nothing. This is about choice. And when I choose not to take on Ron down the hall, who I know is an overt sexist, and treats women like crap, well, this is back on me. And so I'm a big brand adoption guy. Start with 30%. Start with the 30% of men who want to help you, support you. If you have employee resource groups, one of the common questions I get is, can we include men? You know, you've got a very progressive approach. There's always a question, can we include men in our women's resource group or our affinity group? The answer is yes. But you have to realize the mission of the resource group is to advocate for the equitable treatment and advancement of women. And so if you buy into that, yes, I absolutely want you there. And so that's a big one, inviting men in, asking them questions. The other one that I love, and this is I do a monthly newsletter, because all I want to do is create opportunities for conversation. Because what I'll tell you is men are scared to death to have this conversation, that we will say or do the wrong thing and you will call HR. And so I'm going to ask for two things. One is assume good intent. You know, realize this is new for us. It shouldn't be, but it is. And then, you know, really seek to help us. But at the end of the day, create conversations. My program is called Gender Conversation Quick Starter. Every month it comes out, and you can pull any news article you want, and there's something in the news every day. USA Today, at least twice a week, runs a article on gender or equity. Bring it into a staff meeting and talk about it. That's all we want to start doing, is having conversations, and that's how you're going to start to move people along and create more inclusive environments. You got to start by talking about this.
Yeah. And I think you got to meet people where they're at, you know, to that point. We've said it over and over again. We want to assume that people want to do this because it's the right thing to do, but Not everybody even knows what that means. Not everybody necessarily believes that. And so if they have some sort of personal connection, whether it's a daughter, a partner, or just somebody in their life, that they can think about it from that perspective, that is very meaningful. I often get male reporters who, I talk to female reporters and they share their personal stories of a wage gap, always off the record, and then the male reporters go, is this real, And I like to say to them, go ask a woman in your life what her experience is. It's very powerful.
One other thing I want to put out there, and that is, I believe 30% of men are ready and willing to do this work. I think another 50% will get on board because of meeting them where they are.
And
I'm going to be, totally transparent. 20% will never get this.
Yeah.
I have done diversity and inclusion work for 20 years. I am not an idiot whisperer. And by that, I mean you will never change some people's mind. So don't bother. But as you change the organization, they're going to figure out maybe this isn't a place for me.
Yeah, they'll be the
and
majority.
They will choose to leave. So don't be an idiot whisperer. Go find the early
adapters.
That's
really good advice. So we have about 10 minutes left. I would love to allow for some audience questions. There's microphones in the room, or I think people can just shout them out. Does anybody have any specific questions for our panel? Yes, in the back. Long hair, Jeff.
So you actually have an advantage, though, being a 100-person company, right? It's really easier to move a ship when you have 100 people versus 30,000 people. So I think what's missing in your organization is what I call sponsorship, and it's more than just mentorship. Sponsorship are people that are advocating for you when you're not in the room. So making sure that you align, even if you have a small pool of talent of women of color, and we know that women of color tend to be underrepresented, especially in leadership, but tend to be the most aspirational folks. Mm-hmm. That's in the McKinsey Lean In study that just came out, Diversity in the Workplace, I think it's called. So I think you need career sponsorship. So that's folks that can meet with them, mentor them, help groom and promote them. But also, again, the real key are those people that are actually moving the needle for them when they're not in the room. And I'll be really quick, but I have an example of where this happened in my career. I had an example, an idea of a women's program. So just like we're at 11,000 Women's Summit. So Salesforce has an annual user conference with 170,000 registered attendees. And I said, why don't we spend one of those 4 days focused on women, focused on equality? And I had this idea and I showed it to my direct manager. My direct manager was like, that's pretty good, but I don't know how to help you. And I was like, oh. So I literally happened to be on a train ride from Boston to New York with one of our senior leaders, and I shared the PowerPoint presentation with her, and I had had this on my computer for a year. And that, again, that meeting where she was going to our CEO and asked for something, she said, send me your slides. And when I tell that people are like, you gave away your great idea? Right? I had this on my laptop for a year, and I was like, okay. I sent her the slides, she did a couple things to them, and she presented, and there she was advocating for me when I wasn't in the room. And I think that's what's important, to sponsor and mentor people who will know your employees of color, so align them to an executive, and look for ways to actively get them in positions of power and give them opportunities.
Yeah,
and I would just do a 30-second build on that, because that's absolutely... the other thing is, what's the business case for having women of color in the top of the organization? Because if you're a nonprofit of any type, you are touching communities, you are touching people, well, you should be representative top to bottom of the community that you're serving. It's just common sense.
Yeah.
So
fantastic. Absolutely. Great. Over here.
Hi. My question is around sort of how you start to move maybe the organization, and especially the men in the organization who sort of have a good intention but just don't get at all that this is an issue. So I work for a large semiconductor firm, and some parts of the organization, some people in the organization have taken a really in-depth learning lab, white men and allies, and it was an unbelievable sort of tear you down experience. But at the same time, other men were supposed to attend that session, and my boss, one of them, and when I went to him, he's like, I really don't have a problem with you, I promoted you, and so, and he said to me, like, well, but what do you hope to gain from it? I just sort of, like, I said, well, what I hope to become a better manager, you know, take some blinders off, learn something. But I'm wondering, you know, this is a big organization, worldwide, 13,000 people. Our unit is in Gloucester, which is on an island that people don't always come off of. And so how do, like, what are the right strategies? Because you can't just get to the data. Like, you can't just throw the right data at the managers, these white male managers and executives, because they'll probably, that'll give the pushback, right? Yeah. That's sort of what we did in the 80s. So what kinds of, you know, this learning lab is really good. It's sort of a little bit at a time. I'm just wondering what other strategies, again, this is a big organization. Our unit is 1,500 people on our site. So what strategies to start moving people's minds?
So my point of view would be do a skunk works. Find one division, your division, who gets it, top to bottom, and start to implement a plan and a strategy and start to do it really well. And feed that up the organization of the CEO. Because if I have found out one thing, men, senior leaders, divisional leaders are incredibly competitive. And if I think Al, your CFO is, or your chief legal counsel, is getting ahead because he's doing this women's thing, well, I don't know what that is, but I don't know that I like Al getting ahead for that. And that sounds really manipulative, but that's how big corporations work. But you also have a concentrated opportunity. It goes back, almost back to this and what you said. You got a small group. Drive change and then start to do best practice sharing with other early adopters of that. Have a plan, create a business plan, create strategies, create initiatives, and hold people accountable.
We do have limited time, so I want to get to our next question. Thank you so much.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I actually attended one of those salary negotiation workshops.
Oh, fabulous.
It was wonderful. If anyone wants to hear about the experience, I'd be happy to share.
I have a schedule.
and they're offered free throughout Boston. But in that workshop, we had learned that men tend to have more, they're more likely to ask for raises, and they are more open about talking and having salary negotiations, and that, you know, women are kind of holding themselves back by being afraid of doing that sort of thing. So thinking about this data that you're looking at with the gender pay gap, how Salesforce paid out a lot of money to close that gap right away, awesome. But in the future and going forward, what are some strategies that you can look at or sort of employ to other people to empower women to keep asking for more money and being the strong ones that are going out and putting themselves out there for to kind of close off what is even larger than the pay gap? It's the, I think, I don't know, bravado or...
Opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you.
Ma, do you want to take on that one?
Sure. So one of the things that we think is going to help is stop where companies, meaning the legislation, stop asking what your gap is now so you're not bringing your gap with you. I mean, I think you hit it on the head. It's 100% you need to negotiate. Use those things like, I think, Indeed, Glassdoor. Use those tools to find out what's competitive in your market, right? What you should be paid. And I think also we need to just take the blinders off of being able to ask someone, consult with other friends in the industry that might have a similar role as yourself, right? And then I think it's about negotiating, making a case, letting your manager know this is your expectation. And depending on how your organization is, the way we do it, you can also use your HR business partner as a resource, right? So go to that person and explain your situation, or I would sell it like you're selling a promotion, right? I believe I should be promoted because these are the amazing things I've done. I should be compensated because these are the amazing things I've done, right?
Yeah, and in the workshops, we actually have women write out their pitches based on their value and based on asking for, you know, what they've done in the research to understand what their salary should be. Next question. I know we've got about a minute left.
Yes, so I just want to add on that and talk about the equal pay. So I'm from Salesforce, and I actually came to support Molly and Cindy here. And I just want to say to ask for a salary raise, we have an issue as a woman, and I can say that throughout my career, it was always an issue. And in Salesforce, just a few months after I was there, I just got the email, oh, we found a gap that compared to other male that doing the same work. And I was so in shock, but I can say that we have, this is an amazing thing because we always, it's hard for us to go and ask. And we need kind of like only when we really proved ourselves and we are kind of like 120% done this, 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 and this, then we only feel maybe capable to go and ask for more salary. So this is an amazing program, and I'm coming from Commerce Cloud, which is an acquisition to Salesforce. And I can say that this was really, and the transparency of the company to talk about it, because I never wanted ever to know how much other people get paid, because I knew that I'm always underpaid compared to other people who do the same work. But to have this transparency and do talk about number, I think it's important. And I just want to share kind of like my personal that Salesforce do, it's not only they're talking, and I'm talking about working level. It's really, so I think it's really nice that Salesforce is a role model. So
well, and this is where employers matter, right? Employers taking action matters, and women asking, right? It's gotta end this end legislation.
I promise I didn't post
that. Yeah, I was gonna say, Molly, how much
Literally,
you pay her?
I didn't do that on purpose, but thank you, girl. I like the way we coordinated that.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, we have one last question over here, and then I think we have to wrap up for the morning.
Hi. I want to thank you all. It's been really informative. There's been a lot of research that showing that, and you can make the business case. A lot of people have been making business cases for equity. And some of the gender gap actually happens within organizations, not just asking, but in the promotion process or the lack of promotion process. And some of the research coming out of the Kennedy School is saying, hey, employees, managers should be doing their reviews before employees. Like one simple thing that you can do is flip that. And this is something that I have brought up to people, but it seems like the easiest thing to take on. And I'm wondering, what are some strategies to convince management to look at some of this research? And if you don't have an outside organization who's coming in and advising them, is there any way for an employee who sees patterns that fit the research and are very much in line with, like, hey, these are some really easy things we could do? What are some things that could empower us as employees to try to bring these things up?
It sounds like, you know, what Molly was talking about earlier on the sponsorship piece, too. This is where I would be so intentional about sitting with people in your organization who feel the same way you do and developing a strategy, amplifying each other in meetings, other people bringing this, who are the people that whisper in their ears that they will actually listen to, how can you get to them? Molly and Jeff, I don't know if there's anything to add.
Well, I think one thing to add is if you have an employee resource group, if you have a business resource group, whatever you're calling them, there's a real trend going on to say there were affinity groups, which people came together, then we called them business resource groups, and they go and solve a business issue. Now they're serving as a collective voice of employees. So your women's resource group really needs, could be tasked with doing that. And then it's not just one person bringing it forward. Here are the collective voices of 50% of the women in the company who have expressed this issue. At that point, senior leadership really will sit up and take notice. Yeah. So that's one way, is to use your colleagues.
Yeah, it's the collective voice that's really powerful. Yeah. Molly, do you have anything to add on that last
one? No, I would absolutely say that. But one thing to note, though, when we did do our equal pay assessment, we actually didn't have the managers do it, right? Because we wanted to use, we didn't want it to be subjective and based off performance, right? So we wanted to use factors that no one could argue with, tenure, education, people manager or not. So really try to find that advocate, that sponsor. So once you have your collective, you have some ideas, go find that person who can help champion it forward.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I think that is all the time that we have today, but I want to thank Molly and Jeff for joining us. Thank you all for being with us today. I think we're heading to lunch next, where Meryl Streep will be. Maybe we've heard of her, so you might want to go check that out. Thanks, everybody. And there's evaluations at the end, too. Oh, book signings. Book signings. Sorry, didn't know what that was. Book signings as well happening on the floor.
Oh, before you leave, can you take a picture just real quick?